Route 616, your home for all things Marvel Man continuity. Hello, buddy. This is episode... What fucking episode is this? I think it's episode 59.
I have 59. No fucking clue. At this point, we should probably stop counting unless we want to make 100 special.
It is episode 59. That's what I thought. I just like saying it because I'm a very milestone person, so when we get to a special one, I like to point it out.
I've made it to 1975 in the order without noting a single milestone.
It's pretty...
Although I did unofficially declare Amazing Spider-Man 121 as a milestone, and then discovered there was a whole bunch of really shitty comics right before it.
Every week we do another one of these. It's wild that we've done so many of these.
It's gotten to the point now that I'm just kind of accepting I'm a podcaster now. The imposter syndrome's mostly gone.
As you can see, anybody who happens to be watching this, there's no Dan this week. We said fuck that guy, and I'm just kidding. He just,
Dan said fuck us because he found out we were talking about nothing but Hulk and just bailed. Came up with some excuse about having a job or something, but none of us believe him.
Yeah. In all honesty, we're recording a special episode tomorrow that's about our love of comics and how we get into them and all this stuff. So we only had one day where we could have Dan, and we want him for that, and we want to do that this weekend while I have time to do it. So we're doing the two-person pod today, which is all fine and dandy because Bill and I, we're the ones that read them anyway. So
and I think we're actually going to have some conversation on these ones because it sounds like we're actually on differing opinions about them.
Possibly. We'll go more into that as we go into them. Today is an all Hulk episode. We have issues 60 through 66, or is it just 65?
I think it's 65.
65, yeah, because that would be 6, yeah. 60 through 65, Beast Stories of Tales to Astonish, because the Hulk's returned to getting his own book, well, half book.
Taking us all the way back to the Beasts of Berlin, if you remember how terrible that one was.
Yes, just for some perspective on how long ago the Hulk run started since we've been reading Giant Man and Namor.
Yeah, I was not impressed to see that giant. Because on the Marvel Unlimited app, I have to flip back through the A story to get to the B story, so I got to page through Beasts of Berlin again, and I haven't liked that one time.
I would imagine not. Dan's more the pop culture nerd. I don't have anything prepared, so we might just jump into the comics today, I'm thinking.
Yeah, so, I don't have anything pop culture related either. My pop culture consists entirely of, like, pro wrestling from 5 years ago and reading comics for this podcast. Well, for myself, and then rereading them for this podcast. And I don't think there's any world where Millie the Model from 1959 can be considered pop culture.
Shit. Well, we'll start off with Tales to Astonish, number 60, B story. This one's titled creatively, by the way, The Incredible Hulk.
Before we get into this, I did think of a bit of pop culture news we can mention.
Alrighty.
Full Insanity has hit my co-host, who has now decided to tackle the Expanded Order and DC 2, despite listening to me complain about them for as long as we've known each other.
Oh yeah, I think we teased that on the last one, but didn't actually really explain it. Because we talked before in this podcast that we use a complete Marvel Read and Order site that is like a really in-depth and great resource for if you want to be crazy and tackle an order like this. And
credit
to
Travis Starnes for making this thing.
Yes, Travis Starnes is his name. He's great. He writes his own stuff, and he has an ad on the side of his page where you can support his writing on Patreon, so that's always cool. He probably deserves it. I mean, he's done a lot of work with these fans, and these are cool resources. So, Bill and I both pay for the yearly subscription where we get the extra resources and statistics and all that.
Yeah,
extra
them being paywalled is a new thing because we were just killing the server costs with trying to keep the site running. We had to paywall
nice
a lot of it, but I was paying for it back when I didn't get any benefit from paying for it just because I liked having the site around.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a nice little way to support the guy. So
I actually don't know what the free version looks like, because back when I wasn't paying for it, this was just the free version.
Yeah. So I was only doing the main 616 order that we cover here on the podcast.
And the World War II order, because we've worked that
technically
in.
Yes. Yeah, we worked the World War II order into
largely
the main 616.
I'm firmly of the belief that the World War II order shouldn't be a separate order.
It shouldn't be, because, well,
it's Sergeant Fury and Invaders
is the main thing.
And then characters that were introduced through Sergeant Fury.
Exactly. So, like, that Captain Savage guy was introduced in Sergeant Fury. And Invaders, how do you not have Invaders in your order? So,
And from what I understand, I don't pay a lot of attention to the forums, but from what I understand, Travis has even come around, and later runs of Invaders are just main 616 marked flashback, because even he's decided
The
World War II order was a mistake that he made when he started, and he just hasn't changed it to being 616, because it would fuck up everyone's stats who already read the thing.
Yeah, they must be, because he only has the first run
because he's changed his mind on it, but to take away the World War II order would cancel out all the reading records of people who did it.
Yeah.
There's no way to just port that over.
That's pretty fair. So, now besides, and Bill has this whole time been tackling a DC order that Travis also does, and the expanded order of Marvel, which is just everything Marvel's ever published, essentially.
Not everything they've published, everything that is tied to 616 Marvel, either in comics or through handbooks.
Yes, with any kind
of
character.
There is a lot of stuff even the expanded order doesn't include. In fact, there's currently a fairly heated debate going on about whether Lana needs to get roped in, because people thought they found a tie into several of the other romance comics, and then they discovered that maybe that's just a generic name for a villain that gets used all the time in pop culture from the era, and so people are trying to figure out if it's enough of a tie to bring Lana in or not.
Oh, that would be a nice addition for you.
I'm completely not advocating out of self-interest in my belief that it should not be brought in, because fuck that. I survived Georgie being brought into the Order, and I survived the funny animal being brought into the Order. I don't know if I can do it again.
Yeah. So,
lucky. These giant uploads happened before they started reading the Order, so they're going to get it nicely spaced out by stuff that doesn't suck.
Yeah.
As much.
I might get unlucky one of these days. We'll see.
I think Lana is pretty much the last battlefield. At this point, most of the full Marvel have been picked over by people that are even more insane than I am and are literally reading everything that Marvel published.
Fair. Yeah, I mean, obviously it isn't everything, because I've been reading some of this old stuff now, and they only pick out certain stories. So
yeah, because those are the ones that actually link.
Link to anything.
The only way I think you'll get screwed is if some writer of a modern comic book in the future decides to be creative and reference a past story, like the way the Funny Animals order got brought in, because that exists entirely because of that comic from 2019 where Ziggy Pig and Silly Seal go to Latveria.
Yeah, I have the... Is it the Deadpool helmet?
I don't know if Deadpool's even in it. I've only seen the cover, and it's like them next to a sign saying, like, "Welcome to Latveria."
Yeah.
I haven't actually read the 2019 comic.
I think after that, they were also used in Deadpool in one of the newer runs, too.
Because that would also bring it in, because Deadpool is 616, obviously.
Yeah. So, because Marvel's gotten in the nice, fun habit of referencing old characters in modern years. Like
that's not a new thing.
No, it's not, but...
I mean, Gary Conway started doing that back in, like, fucking 69, 70.
Sounds about right.
I mean, hell, I'm having to pick through all these random 50 sci-fi creature features because at some point someone decided they would be cool to bring it back as a one-off villain.
I mean, you would have gotten a little fucked early because Stan decided to include some romance characters. Well, Stan and Jack decided to include some romance characters in the fucking Fantastic Four wedding, so...
Yeah, and I mean, Hulk... relatively early on. Or no, it's not Hulk. It's Beast. Beast's solo comic features Patty Baxter.
Nice.
Who's Patsy Walker. Or Patsy Baxter. Who's Patsy Walker married to Buzz Baxter from the Romance Order. And then she goes on to become Hellcat.
Yeah. So yeah, we're tackling these orders.
Those won't be breaking into the podcast much, other than occasional complaints and jokes, because
yes.
Golden Age comics do not make for an interesting podcast.
No,
all the
issues
we had with early Silver Age comics, where it's just the same thing over and over again, are there. Only the stories are even worse and have even less continuity.
I do foresee possible spin-offs in the future, but it would be not for quite a while, and it'd be with more modern stuff.
Yeah, so. There's non-canon stories that would be interesting to cover, like Spidey started showing up where I am, and that's expanded only because it's not 616 Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But it's basically a Spider-Man comic, so there's no reason to not talk about it.
And I would love to do the Ultimate Order someday, but... And that would, I think that'd be fun, but
we'll discuss that. Spoiler, the Ultimate Order is quite bad. It has some high points that people remember, like Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, and that's about it, right?
But the consensus has been that most of it is quite bad and overly edgy.
Oh, Ultimate Spider-Man hard carried that whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be averse to us doing 2099 either, which is also quite terrible.
That's fair. That's probably more consistently terrible, I would say.
Yeah, I can't think I can't think of a hard carry in 2099. It got bad by a 90s edge.
I mean, obviously Spider-Man 2099 would be the top character there, but it's not like a really good thing.
I don't
remember
him being good in the actual 2099 order. He's only cool when they drug him into the actual 616 order.
Pretty much. That's been my consensus when I've read them.
I'm not looking forward to reading them, but in their defense, at that point, the 616 comics are quite bad, too, because that's early 90s when they were publishing everything and had no quality control.
That's true.
Much like the late 70s.
Anyways, we'll get
back
to the
point. I'm in 1977.
That's a good reference for Bill. But we'll stop on our tangent for now, and we'll get back to task for what we're actually covering. I mean, Bill might love to cover some Patsy Walker, but that's not what we're here for.
I wouldn't mind doing like a single episode retrospective on the entire series, but there's fucking nothing to say about it. There's 6 jokes, and they just reuse them all the time with interchangeable romance characters.
Sounds like a great time. Can't wait to get there. So like I said, this one's creatively titled The Incredible Hulk. We have Stan Lee and Steve Ditko as the artist on this, at the beginning at least. We'll talk about that later. Inks by George Russo.
I think we have Ditko all day today.
Do we? That's probably why I didn't like next week as much.
We don't have to switch this issue. Or this episode.
Okay. We might talk about that near the end then. Sam Rosen is on letters. Jack Kirby and Sol Brodsky were on the cover for this. August 1964 release date, 10-page story. And Bill's going to take this first one.
All right. Wow, for 10 pages, this is a fairly substantial recap.
Oh, lovely.
In a hidden although I suppose a lot happens in this comic. In a hidden cave in the New Mexico desert, the Hulk is once again going through the process of reverting into his alter ego, Bruce Banner. After the transformation is complete, Banner wonders if the Hulk is his true self and if he'll ever be free of his curse. At the military rocket base, General Ross is complaining to his daughter Betty about Banner's tardiness and that the new robot, which is supposed to study nuclear explosions at close proximity he just built, is likely a dud. Banner shortly arrives, nobody knowing that there's a spy in their midst. I'm not sure why that's all one sentence. That makes no sense. Those are two different ideas. But anyway, enough critiquing this writing. General Ross scolds Banner for being late to work on the robot, and Betty asks Bruce to confide in her the reasons he's so frequently absent, a request he denies. Banner works on the robot again, but his thoughts soon return to the Hulk and the nature of his transformations. Reed, we get a recap for people who didn't read the old Hulk series.
I wouldn't blame them.
No, that series was terrible, and I'm glad they did away with pretty much everything it developed. Other than Ross and Betty. He works through the day until General Ross tells him that he must have the robot ready for testing the next day. Working through the night to finish the robot, Banner discovers someone fleeing the outside hall. Getting too excited over the events, Banner transforms into the Hulk. The Hulk, not caring about the possible spy or Banner's invention, leaves the base to plan his next attack against humanity. At dawn, the spy knocks out the robot's intended pilot and climbs into the device and walks it out to the testing range. The robot withstands a nuclear attack and attacks from tank artillery. Suddenly, the spy has the robot destroy the tank, much to everyone's shock. The Hulk, witnessing the display, recognizes the robot as Banner's creation and wants to destroy it. The spy battles the Hulk as an ultimate test of the robot's indestructibility. During the battle, the robot withstands the Hulk's attack and gains the upper hand when the Hulk gets excited enough to cause his transformation back into Bruce Banner. Yeah, we haven't quite hit modern Hulk rules yet. He doesn't get stronger as he gets angrier at this point, and getting himself worked up as the Hulk will turn him back into Banner. I'm glad they dropped those ideas. The spy easily knocks out the weakening Hulk and frees the scene. Investigating the scene, some soldiers find Banner and bring him to General Ross for questioning. Ross refuses to believe that there was a spy. He suspects that Banner piloted the robot and hid it somewhere, until a soldier reports that the robot was spotted moving through the desert. He orders his troops to pursue it, and when Bruce offers to build an even stronger robot to combat the original, Ross declines because he suspects that Banner is somehow involved with the spy. The story ends with Betty trying to console Bruce and Bruce's thoughts considering the menace that the Hulk poses to them all. So that's that story.
I kind of hate being harsh on this one because it's the first one. But saying that, I only gave this 2 stars.
Yeah,
I didn't really like this. This
I
wasn't
gave it
really.
3.
I had a feeling you would.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as good as Hulk Becomes, but they're finally starting to get it right. Like, they haven't gotten his powers completely locked in yet, and they haven't quite got the transformations locked in. But this is a lot more to Hulk you'll know from today than anything you saw in early comics. And they're actually working on having an ongoing story now.
Yeah, true.
Like, this is setting up a lot of stuff for the future.
Not to mention that that's part of why it's a little meh, too, because they do have to set up so much since this is the first one back.
Yeah, this issue's a lot of recap and setup.
Which normally I'm good with, because I love me a good old, transition issue type deal, but yeah, this one just, I don't know, it's a bit of bad taste in my mouth from the previous Hulk 2 and that dragging over, so.
And that
it's not
definitely
fully.
Is a thing, because the first time I read these, I hated this entire run of Hulk we're going through for the next 2.5 weeks. Just because I had it in my head that Hulk was terrible. I tried to rate them objectively, which is why we're going to see a fair number of 3s still in here.
Yeah.
But I didn't enjoy reading them. And coming back to them for the podcast, I quite enjoyed every issue I read today.
Fair. I mean, after this I might be a little more fair for a few issues, but we'll see.
Yeah. Even the humanoids that I hated before. This time I'm like, yeah, they look stupid, but so do most of the antagonists in this era of comics. And other
That's
than that,
true.
They're not but.
So, moving on to the next one. Good old 61 B story. This one's titled Captured at Last. Stan Lee and Steve Ditko still together. I think at this point they're talking, so that's good. George Reese is
in. Time jump back a year.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. George Reese is as Inks. Jack Kirby and Saul Brodsky on cover. Sam Raisin on letters. September 1964, release date, 10-page story. And I will take this one away. Actually, this is, by the way, a very important issue, so
open your ears. Brings in a very important character for the future.
Open your ears. Bruce Banner has once more become the Hulk and is in battle with the spy who walked away with his new robot. The spy escapes just as the Hulk begins transforming into Banner, retreating into one of Banner's many secret caves filled with scientific equipment. The spy reasons he has just the right amount of equipment to build a crude missile that he can use to destroy the nearby rocket base. Bruce Banner returns to the base to work on a device that will allow him to track the stolen robot. As he's finished and is about to sneak off the base, he spots the arrival of the new officer, Major Glenn Talbot. Which is also an important deal here. I might be getting confused with the next one, but...
Anyway. Talbot is a huge deal.
Yeah, Talbot is a huge deal. Talbot reports to General Ross and informs him that he's been sent by Washington to investigate the allegations that Banner is possibly working for foreign spies. Just then, Betty enters the room and she is introduced to Talbot and asked to show him around the base. When they arrive at Bruce's lab, they find him missing. Talbot learns from the guard that he was spotted going into the hills with a strange device. Talbot asks Betty to give him a tour around the area surrounding the base. From the helicopter, Talbot and Betty spot Banner tracking his robot. As the helicopter lands, Banner sees the spy and his robot preparing to throw a boulder at the helicopter. Turning into the Hulk, he jumps up to stop the rock from falling on Betty and Talbot. Talbot drives to shield Betty while the Hulk smashes through the rock. Its debris hits Talbot, giving him minor injuries and gaining Betty's concern. The Hulk battles the robot until the spy's missile launches, and the Hulk knocks the robot down a cliff to the spy's apparent death. Hulk jumps after the missile and smashes it in midair. The resulting explosion knocks out the Hulk, who is captured and restrained by the military. Talbot suggests to Ross that somehow the Hulk and Banner must be connected, which is a good plot point. As the Hulk
Talbot
regains consciousness...
Talbot's clearly the smartest guy in this comic.
Yes, it's it actually adds a bit of a breath of fresh air for the personalities in this book, but as the Hulk regains consciousness, Ross orders a tank battalion to prepare to fire. The Hulk desperately tries to break free of his shackles before he can be executed. And that's the end of that synopsis.
Yeah, this is their first really good cliffhanger they've had in Hulk.
Yes, which they start doing a lot of cliffhangers, like Namor.
I mean, that's comics going forward, and they still do that today.
But we're hitting that point where it's become such
It's not just a text box at the bottom saying next issue Doctor Doom is no longer enough.
Which is pretty
especially
fair.
When it's Doom's first appearance and you don't know who that is. I hate love when comics do that and you just see like next issue the Mandrill. Well, who the fuck's the Mandrill? Why am I going to buy a comic for that? I'm not making up a villain called the Mandrill, by the way. That's a real guy. I think he's from Spider-Man.
Probably. That sounds about right.
But yeah, anyway, this was another 3.
I gave this one a 3. I like this one.
Yeah. The story's still ticking along nicely, and as Ryan mentioned, Talbot actually adds a lot to the story.
Talbot's a great character.
Yeah, because at this point they're writing Ross too one-dimensional.
Yes. Although, I feel like relatively quickly them having Talbot around kind of helps Ross a little bit.
Oh yeah, but Talbot improves Ross too, because he starts... I don't think it happens in this run, but he starts hating the Hulk, but liking Banner.
Yeah, no, that doesn't happen this run, but there is some actual... He has a little more character later in this run, and the worst part of this run, he actually gets... It's better for him, because he kind of gets a little more character at one point, but...
Yeah, he stops just being a cardboard cutout. I hate the Hulk. Rah, rah, America.
Fuck yeah. A very important issue here, and a good one as well, and we... We have another one coming up here real soon. It might be next. It might be the one after. We'll see. I forget the order of the
show. Next issue is also very, very important. It introduces two major characters. Yeah, it introduces two major characters from Marvel continuity.
This is the one
forward.
I was thinking the last one was, but the last one was also very important. So, but this one, issue 62, B story. This one's titled "Enter the Chameleon." Everybody's favorite film, of course.
I guess they didn't have to build suspense about who one of the characters was, since they're literally in the name.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's technically not new. He's been in Spider-Man before, so.
This is the first time he's actually appearing as the Chameleon, though.
Is it?
Yes, the reason he was in Spider-Man before was he was in disguise, I believe. I think this is his first actual appearance.
That's crazy. Anyway.
Tales of Suspense 58A. Oh, no, he played Captain America fighting Iron Man before. I'm wrong.
I was going to say that doesn't feel right, but...
Yeah. I mean,
this is still a very early appearance for him, either way.
I could have sworn I read a comment about this being his first appearance, but clearly I'm misremembering, because he definitely appeared in his role as the Chameleon before. And the character I was thinking of from Spider-Man was Mysterio, not the Chameleon anyway.
Ah, perfect. But yeah, Stanley, Steve Ditko still together here. George Russo's on inks. Chick Stone drinks. Jack Kirby on the cover this time. Sam Rosen's on letters. October 1964, release date, 10-page story. And Bill will take this very vital issue away.
All right. Continuing from the last issue, the army is about to execute the Hulk. Meanwhile, the mysterious leader hires the Chameleon to travel to New Mexico to find out what happened to the spy he hired to steal the robot from the missile base. Which is nice that they actually give us an explanation for the spy being there. While in New York, Rick Jones hears of the Hulk's fate and gets permission from Captain America to go to his friend's rescue. There's the bad part of this issue.
Yeah, this issue brings Rick Jones back into the fold, which, Rick Jones has heat now, huh?
Rick Jones has heat, but he does something really important in this run, so I can't really get too mad at him.
Yeah. There's a couple interesting things they do with Rick Jones. Some good, some bad in this run. So we'll talk more about those as they come along. But
currently it's just my generalized Rick Jones heat that hung over from partway through the original Hulk run, because I already hated him back then. Boat the Chameleon, in disguise, and Rick Jones end up flying to New Mexico on the same plane, literally in seats next to each other. While in New Mexico, Betty Ross worries that perhaps Bruce ran into the Hulk while out in the desert, not knowing that the Hulk is really Bruce himself. The Hulk, meanwhile, is attempting to break free of his bonds, bringing him near to the point where his level of excitement would cause him to revert into Bruce Banner. Rick Jones arrives on the base and tries to get near the Hulk, but fails each time. The Chameleon fares better, however, disguising himself as Thunderbolt Ross and asking the Hulk to aid him. When the Hulk refuses, the Chameleon uses General Ross's brass, sends the other soldiers away so that they can talk more. That's poorly weighted, but he uses Ross's authority. While his back is turned, the Hulk's constant strain causes him to change back into Banner. He escapes the bonds that were made to hold someone of the Hulk's size. Rick Jones finds the fleeing Banner and secrets him away long enough for Bruce to change clothes. Banner reports to Ross, who is reprimanding his soldiers for allowing the Hulk to escape. Talbot attempts to question Banner, but Banner rebuffs him. Walking out of the room, Banner is knocked out and tied up by the Chameleon, who disguises himself as Banner in order to steal the plans and the prototype for a grenade-type gamma bomb. Betty interrupts the Chameleon and soon realizes that she's talking to an imposter. Betty is also smarter than her father. As the Chameleon tries to capture the girl, Bruce Banner, who is locked in the closet, comes out of the closet and turns into the Hulk, smashing through the wall to save Betty. The Chameleon holds the Hulk at bay, threatening him with the gamma grenade until the Hulk is scared off by an approaching military patrol. The Chameleon tries to get rid of Betty by shooting her off in a rocket speed velocity test sled, but the Hulk stops it and saves Betty, then chases after the Chameleon. Knocking away an army of soldiers, the Hulk dives on the gamma grenade, which the Chameleon attempted to use to destroy the Hulk. The resulting explosion is contained by the Hulk's body. The gamma radiation causes the Hulk to revert to Bruce Banner, who escapes in the smoke. Later, during a board of inquiry due to Betty's testimony, Banner is cleared of any suspected involvement, but Ross explains that he will find out what sort of connection, if any, there is between Banner and the Hulk. Elsewhere, the leader decides that it's time for him to get involved in finding the government secrets he seeks. And that's the end of the recap.
Two good issues of the Hulk in a row. Second three-star comic. At this point, when I was reading these, I was like, holy shit, is this run actually going to be good? It was for a bit, but it doesn't last.
I mean, this is the quality Hulk kind of stays at. Right here.
I don't agree.
Let me finish what I was saying. It dips in the immediate run. But going forward, this is the quality most Hulk stories will be.
That's actually good to hear.
They're this or slightly better.
That's nice. Hulk should become easier to read then.
Yeah, they stay at about a 2.75 to 3.25 rating average. And this one was a 2.9. average on the site, so
I mean, huge deal.
Hulk does get easier. This arc is not that good, and it has some duds in there, especially early on, but after this arc, they're going to start being just about this quality.
I mean, huge deal of an issue. The Leader is introduced, and that's awesome. Leader's a great villain.
The Leader is a great villain, although he's not used well early.
No. Even in this arc, he starts off with great promise, and right away he's pretty much... maybe not right away, but by the end of this arc, he's kind of, like, fucked already.
I mean, by the end of this arc, he's ostensibly dead.
Yes. He's technically killed off by the end of this arc already, but...
That doesn't stick, obviously.
Yes.
But he is temporarily dead. And I don't actually remember how he gets out of it.
I don't know.
I assume they're just comics, and that like next time they want to use them, they kind of just forgot that it happened.
Yeah, probably. I remembered as I let you continue talking before, after we were talking about Rick Jones, I had a very important note about Rick Jones in this issue, because the continuity fucking tracker in me noticed an issue with his being in this run makes no sense. Because he's with the Avengers, and he mentions being with the Avengers in here, but then when we get to Avengers 17 next week, he's fucking with the Avengers, and there's no way he should be... He can't
Rick
be in...
Rick is literally going to be flying back and forth between New York and New Mexico for the next 2 or 3 years.
It doesn't make any sense. They don't address it at all.
Not in that issue. They do address it going forward.
They must have realized that it didn't make any sense.
It's acknowledged in both comics in the future.
Because
that Rick is torn between his role as Captain America's sidekick with the Avengers and the Hulk, and it actually becomes a fairly major plot point for Rick.
Because the Hulk comic that it's happening at the same time that Avengers is happening. Rick Jones is still with the Hulk, but he's also with the Avengers, so...
Oh, yeah. Continuity gets fucked with Rick Jones for a bit, but they are aware of the fact that he's in both places at once.
I just had to point that out because it's not really handled well in this situation, but...
Yeah, no. And here's the thing. It's never handled well. It's acknowledged, but it's hand-waved away, even though quite often there's very little practical way that it's possible, especially given, like, air travel was more comfortable back then, but it was a lot less common.
Yeah.
And going to be bouncing back and forth across the continent every 2 or 3 days.
It's comics too, so there's some suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, if he wasn't going literally to Gamma Base, I'd hand wave it away by saying that the Avengers just let him use a Quinjet.
Yeah.
But there's no way he's landing a Quinjet at Gamma Base without Ross getting all over him and arresting him as a commie spy.
Yeah. But yeah, I just had to point that out, but just a little note.
I was going to leave it until his actual appearance in Avengers, but yes, his continuity does get screwy.
There was something about him appearing. I feel like even right away there was something he said in the comic here that didn't quite add up to me with when his dialogue, but I don't remember what it was specifically.
Here's the thing.
So
Rick doesn't need to be in Hulk right now. Rick is in Hulk because Rick used to be in Hulk.
Yeah. Pretty much.
He pulls one useful thing in this arc going forward that saves Banner. And then, that's like the only important thing I can remember him doing. And otherwise, he's just there for exposition dumps and to get captured when they don't want to capture Betty.
Yeah. Pretty much. That pretty much covers it.
And then he gets written out of both Hulk and Avengers so that they can stick him with Captain Marvel. And that's where I really start to hate Rick Jones.
And there's a reason that Bill hasn't said 1968 is their favorite year instead of like 64 or whatever, 65, whichever one it is. 65.
Yeah. In second half of 65, first half of 66 is pretty much the best year, I think, so far that I've read.
I'd reckon, just looking forward a bit like I have been, I'd reckon you could argue 68 might be, it's not their most important, but it's one of their most important in the early years, because it's when they start to expand on their titles.
It's one of the most important, but there's also a noticeable quality dip in a lot of stuff when they expand the titles, because they haven't expanded their writing staff yet, so they're getting spread real thin.
Sounds about right.
So, like, Iron Man just becomes terrible at that point.
Oh, fuck. Right when he's getting his own title, nice.
Early, like, solo-titled Iron Man are awful.
Oh, damn. That's rough. That's
peak terrible Daredevil. That's Captain America has some rough spots through there. Hulk
Captain
has
Marvel,
some rough
spots. Like you already mentioned.
Spots through there. Captain Marvel just is a fucking rough spot. You get Stan attempts philosophy with Silver Surfer.
Yeah, that's in 68, too.
Yeah, and they're like 48 pages long. The first 8 of them are like 48 pages long each, and they're terrible. Unless Mephisto's in it.
In 68, Astonish turns into Hulk Foley. Suspense turns into Cap Foley. We get Submariner gets his own title. Iron Man gets his own title.
Submariner's
and Iron Man
bad.
Have their one-shot, too.
Yeah, they have their one-shot just to wrap up story arcs that are like half an issue left.
Then there's Captain Marvel, like having a ball shitting on, which should be fun when we get to it.
I might just not read those again for the podcast. Full disclosure, I might not read those again.
I'm not sure I can do that now.
I really hated those.
But yeah, like there's a ton of expansion. Oh, Silver Surfer I didn't mention. That was the one you mentioned. So.
Yeah, Silver Surfer. Those are the only ones I can remember coming out right then.
I was just looking at them the other day, but I don't remember.
I don't
any
remember
other
anything
really.
Else.
Oh, like, Nick Fury gets his own again, and Strange Tales Foley becomes Doctor Strange.
Yeah, that's just comics getting split in half, though. I mean, actual new comics.
Yeah.
I think it's just Silver Surfer and
actual new comics is
Captain
Marvel and Silver Surfer. Yeah, because the others are just splits, and they're getting their own by themselves.
Yeah, and then they bring out a lot more in like 69, 70.
Sounds about right. I haven't seen those yet. But yeah, I don't know how we just got on a tangent there, but I just felt like talking about that for a sec. But yeah, I guess back to 63 B story is where we're going. A Titan Rides the Train, this one's titled. Good old Stan Lee and Steve Ditko's, George Russo's here still. Jack Kirby and Chuck Stone on the cover, Sam Rosen on letters. November 1964, 10-page story, and I will take this one away.
This one's notably the only one I remember liking more the first time than the second time.
Interesting. This one isn't too long a synopsis. Starting
Not
as the last issue.
In this one.
Yeah, this one's kind of a...
It's an action issue.
Yeah.
Which we needed, because we haven't really gotten that yet.
That's true. Bruce Banner is locked in a government prison for allegedly trying to steal a device that he created for the army. He has been taking tranquilizer pills to... this is where Rick Jones comes to play. Tranquilizer pills to keep him from turning into the Hulk while in jail. But Thunderbolt Ross and Major Talbot simply assume he has taken them to keep from panicking. When Bruce has moved to Washington, D.C. prior to his trial, Rick Jones pays him a visit and tells Bruce that he should just tell everyone the truth about who he is. Naive, Rick. Naive. Bruce says that he can never do that, for if enemies of America discovered who he was and how he got his powers, they might try to study him and use his powers for their own desires. Or maybe even make a whole army of new Hulks. Who would do that? Looks at
future Rocks on his shoes.
Yeah, and Ross. Banner thinks aloud that he would reveal his identity, but only to someone who would never let the information get out. This gives Rick an idea. It sure does. And he goes see the president of the United States himself, Lyndon B. Johnson. Was that who he actually saw? I feel like it was a head of security, like a head of
national security. No, he actually sees Johnson.
It was? Okay. I didn't remember that right for some reason. At first, I wonder if I didn't remember it right, or if they referred to it wrong in the later issue in this arc.
They might refer to it wrong in a later issue in the arc that I haven't
reread. Because they do refer back to it next week in one of the issues, or the week after, one of them.
Definitely in this issue, it is actually Lyndon Johnson that he tells.
Okay, that's good.
He's right in the Oval Office when he does it.
At first, Rick can't get through to him, but he gets through easily once he shows the staff his Avengers badge. Once President Johnson knows the truth, he immediately gives Bruce Banner a pardon. Now a free man, Banner is ordered to travel to Astra Island with Glenn Talbot to test his new nuclear device. Talbot still does not trust, however. This mistrust coupled with the fact that Banner has run out of his tranquilizer pills, sees Banner turn into the Hulk again. He is able to get away from Talbot first, and thus Talbot simply thinks that Banner called the Hulk somehow. At that moment, the leader's armies of humanoids strike the Hulk, attempting to capture him for the leader so the leader can learn the Hulk's secret and possibly convince the Hulk to work for him. His logic is that since they both have green skin, they must have both gotten their powers in the same way, which is a pretty good guess, to be fair to him.
It's one of those guesses that's really Stan Lee explaining what's going on.
Yeah, and thus have a connection to each other. As the Hulk is battling the humanoids, Talbot protects the device and then radios the army for help. Continued next issue.
That was a short issue, probably because they skimmed over everything that happens on the train.
Yeah.
Not badly, because nothing that happens on the train is actually that important, but I think I just enjoyed.
Oh, fuck, I just read 64s, didn't I?
Hang on, let me skim. Yeah, you did.
Oh, I did read 60. Fox, I skipped 63. Damn it. I guess you'll have to do 63 now. That was 64.
So let's just jump ahead and talk about 64.
Yeah.
I wasn't even clicking on the fact that, yeah, they didn't even mention the train.
Yeah.
But,
that's my bad, folks.
So, we'll talk about 63 or 64 quickly while I Google up 63's synopsis.
Yeah, I just messed Bill up, too. I was going to say, because the humanoids, I mentioned this one, I have a 3 on my 63 spoiler, but I don't remember liking the issue. The humanoids were a bigger part there, so, and I gave this one a 2, which is sounds appropriate.
I don't like the humanoids at
all. I don't
all.
Either at all.
But they're not actually... There's nothing objectively I can say is bad about them.
I just think
they look stupid and are lame. But, I mean, they're, objectively, they're not worse than other 60s villains.
It's like fucking... It's like a... like with Pepto-Bismol on.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like most of the giant robot villains, so... No surprise that I also hate the humanoids, but anyway, I did give 64 3 stars.
Fair enough. We'll go back to 63, and I doubt that it really... We'll just tie it together. We left off in 62 Where did we leave off? I'll look at that myself here.
The leader was plotting his taking over.
Yes. So then we go back, and we come in with Bruce in prison, which probably should have been the thing from the start that gave it away. So
Well, they
how
captured
does he get
Bruce
there?
so much in this early arc that I didn't realize that there was a problem. Because I
Yeah.
believe he's captured in this one too, because they make him go on the train. And they like
Yeah,
have him
let's
under
see how
guard
he
on the
gets.
train. So that's why I didn't notice anything, because he was like basically already under government watch.
Yeah, fair. Alrighty.
Anyway, let's synopsize. Well, let's do 63 so that things start making sense. I don't really have anything else to say about 64 that we didn't cover anyway.
I guess the only difference for 64 in the credits that's really important is Artie Simek took over on letters. So for 63 was Sam Rosen. I like making sure the letters get their credit, so.
So do I. Lettering is incredibly important, as anyone who's read early Dr. Fate can tell you.
Yeah.
Because that's really badly lettered, and sometimes it's almost impossible to tell what they're saying.
So now we'll let Bill do 63.
All right, so my bonus episode of A Titan Rides the Train. The leader has just completed his special humanoid. He reflects back on the events that led to his superintelligence. He was a lowly laborer working in a chemical research plant. One day, while hauling waste material in the plant's sub-basement, he was caught in a gamma explosion caused by an exploding gamma ray cylinder. Why the fuck was there a gamma ray cylinder in a chemical plant? Surviving the ordeal, he soon found that he had an insatiable thirst for knowledge and began reading books at a frenzied rate. One day, while reading in his study, a dizzy spell struck him, and eventually the effects of the gamma rays had completed his transformation into a man of emerald skin and a large brain. He began calling himself the leader and became a scientific genius. He organized his own spy ring in order to overthrow the government. His humanoid is his most recent attempt to do so. Meanwhile, at the New Mexico rocket base, the chameleon revives and digs himself out of the rubble caused by his battle with the Hulk in the last issue. Elsewhere on the base, General Ross and Major Talbot discuss the Pentagon's request to have Bruce Banner and one of his latest nuclear inventions moved to another base. Not trusting Banner and expecting interference from the Hulk, Ross sends Talbot to act as a security officer to keep an eye on things. Later, the Chameleon, now in a new disguise, overhears these plans being told to Bruce Banner and informs the leader. The leader sees this as a perfect chance to use his humanoid. The humanoid is dropped off onto the train and is spotted by military personnel, who quickly learn that the humanoid is immune to their weapons. Informed of the situation, Talbot locks Banner in a room aboard the train while he deals with the crisis. Banner gets worked up enough to trigger the change that will turn him into the Hulk. The Hulk smashes out of the train and spots the humanoid just as it removes the rail car containing the nuclear device. The Hulk battles the humanoid but finds that he cannot damage its pliable form and is soon tossed off the train. The Hulk bounds back onto the train for a second attack and, during the skirmish, causes the rail car with the nuclear device to unbolt. Part of his memories as Banner make the Hulk realize that if the device is knocked loose from the car, it will devastate a nearby town. He knocks the humanoid off of the train, breaking its connection with the leader. The Hulk jumps back to the train and stops the device from breaking free. Landing on the ground, the Hulk suddenly feels the transformation changing him back into Banner kick in. Later, Talbot finds Banner in the desert. Suspicious that the supposedly detained Banner is free and in possession of the missing device, he orders Banner arrested. Back at the leader's hideout, the leader determines that he must learn more about the Hulk so that he can destroy him, while Banner himself is locked in a military jail cell. So there's how we got to Bruce being captured.
Perfect. Now we filled the gap. That guy squalled before. I gave this one a 3, so this was 3 issues in a row that I liked.
Yeah, I
And
give this
Bill's
one a
getting them
three of
all three
nuts.
so far, so.
I think I give most of this arc threes, other than some really rough stuff towards the end. 'Cause
I'm
like so
probably about
far we've
50-50.
yeah so far we've been pretty consistent on quality. I don't think the quality really dips until Steve leaves.
I think I gave 64 the two. I let the dislike of the humanoids playing more than you did, huh?
Yeah, because 2's actually pretty much rated exactly the same as 60, or yeah, it's rated pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah.
And then we start dropping a bit with the next issue for unsurprising reasons. I feel like this one's probably based on Stan Dechery, because this feels like a real Stan story.
Next one still looks like it's gotten a good average rating. 65.
It's got a good average rating, but it's fallen like 0.05 from the previous ones. It's not a huge drop, but given that we bounced back up to 2.9 for 66, it's definitely a noticeable drop that people didn't like this one as much.
Yeah. So, speaking of, let's get to 65, the last issue of the AB story. This one is titled On the Rampage Against the Reds. Stan Lee is here with Steve Ditko still. Dick Iris is on inks. I forgot that happened. Jack Kirby and Chuck Stone on the cover. Sam Rosen on letters. January 1965 release date. 10-page story. And I will take this last one away. The leader has just completed his special humanoid. He reflects back on the offense that led to his super intelligence. He was a lowly... Oh, yes, this is an origin-like issue. He was a lowly laborer working in a chemical research plant.
You're reading the wrong one.
Am I? Again? How am I doing
this? That's what I just did.
Oh, that's 63. Man, I was not paying attention, because I went back to look at the connection. I was going to say. Okay, On the Rampage Against the Reds. Continuing from last issue, I'm having a bad fucking session here. What's going on? The Hulk is battling an army of the leader's humanoids on Astra Island, just as an army strike force arrives on the island to subdue the creature. Using grenades, they blast the ledge that the Hulk is battling the humanoids on, knocking him into the ocean and sweeping him away in its current. With the Hulk defeated, the leader calls his humanoids back to base to fight another day. The army conducts a fruitless search of the island for both the Hulk and Bruce Banner. Oh yeah, this is where, my brain's not working right now. Talbot is going crazy, like, find him!
Yeah, this is the random Russian issue.
Oh yeah. The Hulk is...
That's why I said I think this one was a Stan Dechery. It stands like, no, we need to do something about the communists.
Probably. The Hulk is swept out into international waters just as the transformation that changes the brute back into the form of Bruce Banner kicks in. Struggling to the ocean's surface, Banner is spotted by a communist sub and is taken aboard. Realizing who Bruce Banner is, the captain of the sub decides to take him back to communist home country. As the submarine submerges, a U.S. military plane flies and spots Banner, and they report back to Talbot, who believes that this is proof that Banner is a traitor to his country. While back at the leader's base, the leader muses that perhaps the best way to learn more about the Hulk is to capture Bruce Banner, making a connection that where one is, the other is never too far behind. Which is, again, very smart.
Proving that that Ross is one of the dumbest motherfuckers in this entire comic, because he's like the only one that hasn't been like, wait a minute, no matter where we go, the Hulk shows up and Banner disappears.
Yeah.
Talbot really adds a lot of logic to his title, like we were saying. He's a good character. Obviously, he's a prick, but he's a good character.
Being a prick doesn't make someone a bad character. Not all characters have to be likable.
Yeah, exactly.
Spoilers, Talbot is still a prick in 78. Only now he's married to Betty.
Meanwhile, Banner is taken to the communist homeland, and there he is brought before their military commander, who tells the hungry Bruce Banner that they will only feed him if he works for them. Banner is soon taken to a lab where the communists have forced some scientists who were previously reported dead or missing to work on secret projects for them. While being put to work, one of the scientists finally cracks and tries to destroy one of the devices being built in the lab, and he is quickly beaten into submission and taken away. Refusing to aid the communists, Banner is then locked in a tiny cell until he agrees to serve them.
Dwelling on the horrors that he's witnessed, Banner excites himself to the point where he transforms into the Hulk. The Hulk then smashes out of his cell and begins tearing the communist base apart, destroying most of their weapons. However, he is shot in the shoulder by a vaporizer ray. After he scared all the soldiers into retreat, he is found by one of the captive scientists who treats the Hulk's wound and provides him with food. Meanwhile, the communist military commander orders an entire fleet of tanks to attack the Hulk and sets to attack the creature himself for proton gun. And that's the end for now.
Yeah, I gotta give this comic some real praise. I really like the way they wrote the communists in this. The scene where Banner is captured and they're trying to make him work for him, because they never overtly threaten him. They always present it like they're being benevolent and kind, while actually subtly threatening. And it's some of the better writing Stan has done.
Yeah. I actually agree. Like, I actually went back to a 3 with this one, to be quite frank.
Yeah, I gave this one a 3 as well. I liked it more than most random inserted communist arcs.
For what it is at its core, it's actually surprisingly decent.
Yeah. I mean, it's clearly editorial mandate that it exists, because it breaks the ongoing story for no real payoff.
Mm.
Like, it's just a random... They're building with the leader. All of a sudden, Hulk jumps into the ocean, gets captured by the communists, and we do a communist story. It's clearly not part of Ditko's intended arc. And I think part of what led to the blow-up between him and Stan...
I was gonna say, that might make things make more sense now.
But that being said, this is actually a pretty good story. It's one of the best Red Menace stories they've done.
That doesn't mean we're saying it's great or anything, but for what it is good. It's 3-star worthy.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Me too.
And it's actually fairly memorable, because this was one of the plot beats that I remembered coming back to this arc. I remembered the train episode issue, and I remembered this one.
There. I didn't really remember this one before I started reading, so I can't say the same. Probably because it broke the regular story.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of why I remember it, I think, because, also, I have the benefit of having read 66 before.
Yeah.
And 66 massively improves on the communist story that's going on. And then there's, like, one more issue with Ditko, and then we start getting Kirby's. No, after the... 67 is the last one with Ditko. So, yeah, it's 2 from when we left off this podcast, but I was just talking about 66.
Yeah. So yeah,
I was going on to my conspiracy theory about that being what broke Stan and Steve up. Because no one's ever said why they hated each other. It was definitely Ditko that hated Stan, and as far as I know, he never said why.
I have ideas why, but if it's not been confirmed, then it's not really...
Yeah, I have ideas why as well, but I've never found, like, anyone saying that Ditko said this is why he doesn't like
Ditko
Stan.
I don't think Ditko really talked to people from the sounds of it.
No, Ditko was never very social. I mean, he was kind of a dick, and he kind of had a negative view of humanity. We definitely see that in his Spider-Mans, where, like, everyone hates Peter.
Now, if I was...
And when Romita takes over, you'll notice an immediate change in the, like, dynamics amongst the students.
Yeah. I think Romita's Spider-Man is a bit, in terms of attitude, is probably more what we know and love. And what
Romita's
is more recognized.
Spider-Man is objectively better, but Ditko's Spider-Man is very important.
And it is really good, too.
Oh, I'm not saying it's bad. I've given more 5s in that issue.
Thank you.
That title than anything else. But yeah, I've given more 5s in that title than any other thing we've covered. Like, I really like it, but objectively, Romita writes a better Spider-Man.
Yeah, true. That's probably the case. I can fully see that. Now, if I was Ditko, I feel like from trying to put myself in his shoes a little bit, which is pretty hard to do, I feel like some of his issues was probably Jack was Stan's main artist.
Yeah.
And he was the guy that got thrown in all the top stuff, and including getting put here, which it's hard to say if Ditko getting mad that that happened or it.
I think Jack coming into this title marks the point where Stan and Ditko's relationship broke down.
I think because they even say in the book, like they kind of allude to that, oh, Jack's here because this title's gotten hot.
Yeah. And so I think there was a fight between Stan and Steve, probably over the Russian arc, that led to Steve
Because
just like, fuck you.
I think there was another title we covered earlier where Ditko did a couple issues, then Kirby came on like that too. So I feel like Ditko was probably tired of being fucked around and not being considered, not being appreciated.
Yeah,
On top
I think a
of.
lot of the breakdown with Ditko boils down to the same reason Stan and Jack eventually broke up. With Stan
Yeah.
wanting all the credit for the good stuff for himself, but whenever he doesn't like something, he's perfectly happy to throw it at the artist's feet.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, like, I called Steve a dick and said he didn't exactly have a positive na opinion of humanity. None of that excuses Stan, who is unequivocally also a massive dick.
Yeah.
I think actually probably the one that comes out looking the best from all of this is Jack, because he just wrote a bunch of bad comics in the 70s, but I haven't seen anything that actually indicates that his personality was really that bad.
No, apparently he was awesome. Apparently he was a great guy from everything I've
I
heard.
think that's why he got away with writing all those bad comics in the 70s, because no one had the heart to take him aside and be like, "Listen, Jack, I respect what you did, but you're putting out shit and you need to stop."
I don't think anybody wanted to old yeller him.
Exactly. That's why I think he got away with 2 years of terrible Captain America and
To be fair.
Eternals and 2 years of terrible Black Panther.
To be fair to him, he was responsible for so many awesome creations and stuff, so
Yeah, his problem was just that he never evolved.
yes. And that is an issue in certain fields. If you
He
don't
couldn't
evolve with the
evolve.
times,
He couldn't
you get
evolve,
left
and
behind.
he's not a great writer. Because when he came up with those great ideas, Stan was doing the writing. And Stan is a better writer than Jack. But also, like, most of those comics that I call terrible from the 70s, if I was reading them in 64, I'd be giving 3 and 4 stars to.
Yes,
They'd
that's
be
also
good back
fair.
then, but by 77, 78, comic writing had evolved to a point where they're just dated and misogynistic and terrible. And it's
It's
just
pretty
that,
fair.
like, all of a sudden we've got Chris Claremont and Steve Gerber and Steve Englehart. And here comes Jack Kirby with his idea straight out of 1962.
Yeah. Some of his cap ideas might have been straight from the 40s, to be fair, also.
They could very well have been. They read like 40s Cap. Except they featured a black man.
That's crazy.
Because Falcon was prominent in those comics. He was like the only character from Captain's America's expanded cast that actually got used. I mean, he had Lila Taylor in committing character assassination. To the point that I don't think she can ever recover. And he had Sharon in, and he committed character assassination on her to a point that she might be able to recover. Just because there had already been character assassination on her before Jack got his hands on it. But yeah, I haven't read any Cap since Jack, but I think he killed Lila Taylor's character. Because she was like one of the most disagreeable people in the series, but she was a really good character.
Don't even think I know the character, so that probably tells you right
Yeah,
there.
she's a black woman from Har like a poor black woman from Harlem that hooks up with Falcon, and they start kind of dating, but this was during the like racial tensions of the 70s.
Yeah.
So she doesn't like authority, and she doesn't like white people, to the point that she's loosely associated with several criminal, possibly slightly domestic terrorist, like black liberation groups. And she hates Captain America. And then Jack Kirby gets a hold of her, and she's your typical Kirby woman. She's like a doting domestic housewife to
Sam.
She's
even driven. She's even drawn like Sue. No?
She basically is Sue, but colored differently.
Fuck.
But yeah, he just like he turns her into like a domestic housewife from the 40s, from this like really strong, really independent, really opinionated, kind of bitchy character that everyone loved to hate. Like no one liked Layla. But we respected her, and then just, Jack gets a hold of her, and it's just like, what have you done?
Shit. Well, speaking of Jack Kirby, he'll come on to the Hulk title to take over for Ditko next week, like we kind of teased while I was talking there about my thoughts and part of why Ditko might have gotten upset. I had another part to that, but I forgot it, and who cares at this point. Next week will be another Hulk episode, except we will have an Avengers issue in there, Avengers 17.
Do we actually get far enough to hit Avengers?
Yes, question mark. We do Tales to Astonish, 66 B-Story, 67, 68, 69, then Avengers 17, then 70 B-Story.
Okay, Avengers comes earlier than I thought.
Yeah, no, it's not at the very end.
No, I knew it wasn't at the event end, but I thought it was like three issues from the end. So I thought we might be opening next, like the week after with it.
No, we get it. So that will be next week's lineup. After that, we will have...
Oh, God, it's that Avengers.
Three more. Oh, after that, we still have four more Hulks the week after. So it's another episode and a half of Hulk, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's that Avengers.
Yes, it's that Avengers.
Thank God we have some Hulk to actually be good.
We have two more issues with Ditko.
That Avengers actually liked, but not by me. It's got a 3.09 rating on the site, and I'm not sure how it
That's
got
crazy.
There.
That's crazy.
I think people like Cap's quirky quartet substantially more than me, because I hated it. I can't believe I'm saying this, think Avengers was improved by bringing Hank Pym back.
That's a crazy statement.
Yeah, this is what that spell of Avengers did to me.
Well, we are gonna get out of here because it's been a long day for me.
Me too.
Tune in next week for more Hulk. Not that is that really a sell?
It's more of a sell than tune into Avengers with the Minotaur.
Fair
and
enough.
Hawkeye being a bell end. And Quicksilver being a bell end. And Captain America being ineffective. And Scarlet Witch being there. Spoiler, Scarlet Witch is the best character.
Bill, you just explained the whole issue. What the fuck?
I just explained the whole run.
Anyways, guys, if you're watching this on YouTube, please leave a like, subscribe, comment, even share if you like to. We are also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, of course. And if you're on Spotify, let us know why you love the humanoids.
Or if you have some dignity, why you like the spy and the giant killer robot. Because that's shit, but at least it's not embarrassing shit.
Anyway, guys, we'll see you on the next episode. Tune in tomorrow. I don't know if it's coming out tomorrow, but we're recording a special episode
tomorrow.
Of Why We Love
It'll
Comics.
At some point.
So stay tuned for that. Because that's going to be a really fun episode. And Dan's joining us. We're going to talk about why we love comics, how we get into them, all that fun stuff. So stay tuned for that. Anyway,
and we might go on a tangent on why comics are like pro wrestling, because I think that they're very closely linked.
Fair enough. Anyways, we will see you on the next one, and peace out.
Have a good